topic under consideration is the New Age movement, specifically how the New Age movement is affecting our public school system. 2 years ago, Brother Alan Bonifay gave us an overview introduction to what the New Age movement was about. This evening, we'll consider how that the New Age movement is affecting our schools. Humanism is a system of religion that focuses on humanity as the ultimate authority and purpose, leaving God out of the picture. And humanism is at the root of the New Age movement, coupled with aspects of paganism and Eastern cult religions. To begin with, let me just sum up a few of the core beliefs of the New Age movement. First, the concept that all is one. New Agers contend that the entire universe is basically one. It swims, as they would say, in one cosmic ocean. That there are no real differences between rocks and trees and humans and other types of animals. Rather, the differences are only apparent differences. New Agers believe that, second, that everything is God. Trees, snails, books, people, anything in this universe can be characterized as God. We are all of one divine essence. God is not an individual life form, but rather God is an energy force that moves throughout this one cosmic ocean. As Shirley MacLaine would say, we are all gods, and we might as well get good at it. Third, New Agers believe in self-realization. They contend that since we are all gods, we need to know that we are gods. We have to come to the conclusion that we are gods. We have to begin to act like God. We must become cosmically conscious of our divine being. They would say of Jesus that he was one of many enlightened masters. Jesus, of course, claimed to be God. And they say that we are God just like Jesus was. We just don't know it. And we need to come to the realization that we are God just as Jesus did. And in doing that, we are able to do the same things and be the same type of person that he was. Fourth, they believe in a coming new world of the New Age. New Agers believe in a progressive evolutionary unification of world consciousness. This will eventually end up, they say, in a one world government. And also a unified, eclectic religion. They refer to this as the New Age, the Aquarian Age, the Age of Peace. A global civilization and eclectic world religion are necessary because they say that nationalism and traditional religion is what keeps this world divided and keeps us as gods from reaching our full potential. Fifth, and last, New Agers teach that reality is what you make it. Reality is determined, they say, by what you believe. And therefore, if you change what you believe, then you change reality for you. There are no moral absolutes. There are no real distinctions between good and evil. Whatever you believe is good. And whatever you believe is bad, is bad. Reality is what you make it. As a group, New Agers are very much involved in various types of movements in America and throughout the world. They seek an end to poverty, disease, homelessness, suffering, discrimination, and inequality in all aspects of life. They oppose the destruction of the environment and so forth. They claim to have the answers to life. They boast to be able to allow people to find their real hidden potential. And the way they do this is through a variety of means. Once a person realizes that he or she is God, then they must raise their level of consciousness. And this occurs through a variety of techniques which have their origins in cult religions, such as yoga, meditation, transcendental meditation, chanting, astral projection, special types of dancing, self-hypnosis, biofeedback, even various types of sexual experiences. The thrust of the New Age religion is self-absorption. In order for us to raise our level of consciousness as God, and reach our potential, then we must empty our mind of who we are. We must erase from our mind the fact that we are human and that we have limits, and we must empty our mind of these thoughts and center only on the fact that we are God, and begin to rebuild our mind and our behavior around that one concept of divinity. The New Age movement is very loosely organized. It's not very cohesive. There is, because they believe that everyone has their own beliefs, their own values. There are many differences, very much a variety of practices. There's no way to calculate, really, because of this, how many people there are in America who follow after the New Age movement. In one of the more recent publications I've found, they estimate that of the four larger New Age magazines, subscriptions range around 600,000. And from this, they project that the number of New Agers would be several million in America today. Among the more famous members of the New Age Society are characters such as Shirley MacLaine, Linda Evans, Joyce DeWitt, Helen Reddy, Tina Turner, Lisa Bonet, Paul Horn, George Lucas, Merv Griffin, John Denver, Felicia Rashad, and Sharon Gless. Such very visible spokespersons as these, of course, give a lot of credence to the New Age movement, and also are largely responsible for its great growth rate. The New Age movement is certainly concerning. It's concerning because of what it teaches. It's concerning because of the rate at which it is growing. But the question before us this evening is, have the practices and beliefs of the New Age movement made inroads into our public school system? Before addressing this specifically, let me note a quote from Marilyn Ferguson in her 1980 book, The Aquarian Conspiracy. This is called by many the Magna Carta of the New Agers. She says on page 280, of the Aquarian conspirators, and she has, by the way, no problem calling this movement a conspiracy. She says very bluntly, we are in a conspiracy to take over the world. And she refers to her fellow New Agers as conspirators. And so she says, of the Aquarian conspirators surveyed, more were involved in education than in any other single category of work. They were teachers, administrators, policymakers, educational psychologists. She goes on to say later on the next page, page 281, tens of thousands of classroom teachers, educational consultants and psychologists, counselors, administrators, researchers, faculty members, and colleges of education have been among the millions engaged in personal transformation. They have only recently begun to link regionally and nationally to share strategies to conspire for the teaching of all they most value. In a more recent work, this was in 1980, in a more recent work, Melody Baker presents a breakdown of the employment of various New Agers that she surveyed, and she doesn't indicate precisely how many are involved in education based upon the various categories she lists. One would guesstimate somewhere between 10 and 20% of the New Age movement is involved in public education. Now, the question before us this evening is, do the personal beliefs of New Agers involved in education and or New Age practices make their way into our public school system? And I believe yes, and I'm going to show a few ways that I believe that this happens. First of all, through what educators call affective education. That's affective with an A. Most public schools in the United States in 1992 are employing some form of affective education. By affective education, educators mean psychological curricula that focuses on the affect, that is, the emotions of the students. Affective education begins in kindergarten in most school systems across our nation. It is normally taught by school counselors, who come into the classrooms. It is generally supplemented by other material given by teachers. The purpose of affective education is to teach students how to deal with their feelings so that they can know what they feel and why they feel what they feel. The purpose is in hopes that in discussing feelings and emotions, that these students will become more rounded individuals and be better able to deal also with the feelings and concerns of others. Now, of course, since emotions and feelings deal with the mind, this is just another term, fancy term, for psychological curriculum. Affective education is accomplished in the school system through a variety of techniques, through therapeutic conversation sessions, through group conversations, through meditation exercises, and also even through writing exercises. Let me give you an example of that from the Quest curriculum. The Quest curriculum is one of the more popular of these types of curricula used in the U.S. today. In 1992, it was used in a little over 20% of our nation's public school systems, and it's a curriculum that goes from kindergarten through high school. From the Quest curriculum, one of the most important features is the student journal. And this journal in the curriculum is said to be used by students for the purpose of improving their writing and spelling ability. And yet, right after saying this, the same teacher manual of that curriculum goes on to state that the teacher is not to correct spelling, is not to correct sentence structure, and is not to correct organization in any way. In actuality, what the writing journal is used for is for the students to express their feelings and emotions about various things that happen to them in life. The students are asked to write about things that make them happy or things that have made them angry, things that make them sad or afraid. They may be asked to write about their parents and what their parents do to them that may make them angry, or about their about what happens in the home and so forth. The concept is, or the idea behind it, is that students will write things on paper that they will not say in public to an adult, either to their teachers and certainly not to their parents. One Quest parent was startled when her daughter came home, and this curriculum is normally taught 2 or 3 days a week. After one of her Quest classes, she came home in an emotional fit, and the mother had asked what had happened, and she explained that she had had some problems in her Quest class. Well, the parent went to the school and tried to find out what was happening, and she was not allowed to read the journal. One of the things that the Quest curriculum specifically says is that this journal is not to be read by anybody, including the children's parents. And it was quite a legal fiasco for her to get her hands on this journal. And after reading it and pointing out what the child had written to the teacher, and by the way, the topic that she had written on was what her parents had last done that had made her angry. And when the parent finally read it and confronted the teacher in the school system, the teacher responded by saying that this was a natural part of the child's education to learn to deal with their feelings and that she could see no harm in it. Another program called the Do So Education program, another very popular one, it's an acronym for Developing Understanding and Self of Others. It also explores students' feelings in similar ways. The teacher's manual introduction reads on page 7, the teacher builds on feelings stimulated by activities that, and children are encouraged to discover the interrelationships among feelings, intellect, and behavior. Throughout the curriculum, the teacher is instructed to present questions as a basis for group discussion, such as, and I have notes for each of these, has anyone ever teased you or hurt your feelings? Let's talk about it. Have you ever been jealous of something that someone else had? Let's talk about it. What are some of the things you know how to do? Have you ever felt stupid because you could not do something? Let's discuss it. Have you ever felt guilty about something you've done? Have you ever been angry? And so on, these questions go. Do So is also a curriculum that begins in kindergarten. It goes from kindergarten through third grade. And also there's a sister program called PUMSI that goes through the fifth grade. And both of these curriculum are very similar. And Do So the Dolphin leads children to bear out their feelings and emotions and to discuss them. And in PUMSI the Dragon does the same things for older students. Well, what is wrong with affective education? First, it teaches children, according to psychologists, to be self-absorbed with their own feelings. Now, the New Age movement is very much based on feelings of the individual. In order to raise their level of consciousness, a New Ager must look within themselves in order to realize who they really are. Since there is no supreme God, the only way we determine what is right and wrong for us is by what we feel. Whatever feels good for us, then that is what is right for us. Affective education teaches children to rely upon what they feel in determining what is right and wrong for them. As one commentator said, used to, people would say, if it feels good, do it. Now New Agers say, if it feels good, believe it. Go with it. Go with the flow. What you feel is what is real. Such emotional subjectivity leads people away from the rational truths of the Word of God. Second, affective education can also have a very negative emotional effect on children. In these curricula, counselors are purposefully dredging up hurtful and oftentimes very strong emotions within the students. And then after these emotions are raised, they then seek to help the student deal with these emotions. Dredging up unpleasant memories, dwelling on strong emotions, can be emotionally damaging, causing a wide variety of mood swings, general depression, and sometimes even paranoia within children. Such emotional damage is enhanced by the fact that almost all of these curricula are used in the public classroom. Not even in a private setting, but in the public classroom. Third, counselors and teachers are generally not qualified to do such psychological work with students. They're not qualified to deal with these types of unpleasant mood swings that can occur when such memories are dredged up. And fourth, not all students have emotional problems. Not all students need affective education. One psychologist in Columbia that I visited with likened it to taking a room full of children and every day or every now and then giving them an insulin shot because some of them might have diabetes. Well, the fact is only a few of them are. And you're actually going to cause harm to the kids that don't need the insulin. And that's what happens in many of these classroom activities. Some of the students are helped, but many of them are damaged. And oftentimes that damage is very extensive. A second way that New Age type philosophy and practices make their way into our public school system is through values clarification. In values clarification, each student is encouraged to come up with his or her own sense of what is right and wrong. The goal of values clarification, and I quote, is to involve students in practical experiences, making them aware of their own feelings, their own ideas, their own beliefs, so that the choices and decisions they make are conscious and deliberate based on their own value system. Now, from a public educator's perspective, and I did visit with some school teachers as well to get their perspective. From their perspective, the purpose of values clarification is clear. The moral fabric of our nation has been unraveling steadily and very quickly. A host of children arrive to our public school system with absolutely no sense of right and wrong, and they are then placed under the control and supervision of our teachers. These children have never had a role model at home that would teach them proper moral values. As a result, one of the aspects of nearly every grade school curriculum today includes, and this is from, again, from kindergarten all the way through high school, is values clarification. And since many of these children cannot depend on parents for role models, the teachers can't say, go learn from your parents what is right and wrong, or look at their life for an example. Teachers have decided, the NEA has decided, that it is up to the schools to teach kids to rely upon themselves to determine what is right and what is wrong. Of course, as Christians, we are not concerned about values being taught to our children. That is, as long as they are Christ-centered values, as long as they are the same values that we have. The problem is that in the public school system, teachers, for a variety of reasons, cannot teach values the way we would like to see them taught, even if they were inclined to do so. They must teach values in a very general way, in an indirect, non-directive manner. Let me give you again some examples from the Quest curriculum. The Quest curriculum is a values clarification curriculum. It does not present morality as a matter of right and wrong, but as a matter of better or worse. And again, what is better or worse for one student is not necessarily better or worse for the other students. In the junior high program, students are taught to follow a five-step process when making important decisions in life. Let me give them to you. First, identify the situation. Second, look at alternative courses of action. Third, consider the information you have and the consequences of your action. Fourth, decide what is the best possible action. And then fifth, evaluate your decision. These are the five steps. Notice nothing is said about whether the decision they're making, whether it's right or wrong, whether it is good or bad. Rather, the only criteria that is given is the consequences that may be involved in their action. Nothing is said about whether the parents would approve, and certainly not whether or not God would approve. In another example from Quest, the teacher is to present a list that includes various things such as trying out for a school play, skydiving, smoking cigarettes, using drugs, drinking alcohol when your parents aren't home. And the teacher then asks each student to take each activity and to discuss the risks and the consequences of each activity. And the teacher is to emphasize that each of these activities carry risks and consequences. In another exercise called Thinking About Taking Risks, the teacher tells the students to list the positive and negative risks or consequences in such activities as shoplifting. Interestingly, the Quest curriculum, again probably the most wide used of these types of curricula, promotes itself as a drug and alcohol prevention program. It has been called by psychologists one of the top three drug and alcohol prevention programs in our nation. While the program does describe in areas the harmful effects of these substances and does state that they are illegal, students are still asked to make their own decisions about whether or not to take the risks and to accept the consequences. Quest hopes that by describing the risks and consequences that students will simply say, no, I don't want to participate in these types of harmful activities. However, this does not always happen this way, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Students are asked to make value-based decisions based on what the risks are and what the consequences are. Well, what is wrong with values clarification? First, it doesn't work. While some students may receive benefit, again, many students are harmed in the process. Students who engage, and this is based on a on research by Richard Blum in a book called Drug Education, Results and Recommendations, Mr. Blum shows clearly that students who are involved in values clarification programs actually as a group choose to take higher risks and to accept higher consequences than students not involved in similar programs. Interestingly, by Quest International's own research, the research they did, their students had a higher tendency, significantly higher tendency, to use drugs and alcohol than those who were not involved in a values clarification type program. Second, a second problem with values clarification is that it fails to teach right and wrong. The fact is there are some things that are right and some things that are morally wrong. And in such cases, it's not a matter of what are the risks or what are the consequences. It's wrong. And we don't do it because it is wrong. If it is wrong, we must not do it regardless of the risks. Values clarification fails to recognize that there are moral absolutes in this world. It fails to recognize the authority of God's word. Values clarification plays into the hands of New Age thinking because, of course, New Agers believe that we need to all think individually and determine our own sense of morality. It's not uncommon for New Agers to say, yes, that is your truth, but this is my truth. As if truth, like beauty, was something that existed only in the eye of the beholder. They do not recognize the absolutes of truth. Because there is no great moral God, and we are all God, we determine our own sense of morality. With the threat of such philosophies, New Age philosophies that teaches that moral, ethical, and spiritual values are purely subjective is real, and it's in our schools. Children today, oftentimes it seems, don't have an ability to know right from wrong. The reason is they haven't been taught right from wrong. They've been taught risks and consequences, and unfortunately, too many students are willing to take the risks and risk the consequences. Defenders of values clarification argue, we're not teaching any set of values. We're teaching neutral values. We are just simply not teaching Christ-centered values the way religious right-wingers would like for them to be taught in the public school system. And of course, by teaching or failing to teach Christ-centered values and actually actively teaching neutral values, they are actually as well undermining the values of the Word of God that we as Christian parents would like to instill in our children. A third way that New Age philosophy and techniques have made their way into the school system is by means of meditation, guided imagery, and wise guides. And I'll lump these together. Meditation and guided imagery techniques are used for a variety of reasons. They're used by psychologists for the purpose of trying to enhance people with very low self-esteem for relaxation, for self-hypnosis, to improve positive thinking, and so forth. Eastern cult religions, of course, use similar methods in order to achieve higher levels of consciousness, for self-hypnosis, to communicate with the spirit world, and so forth. Well, these same types of techniques are also being used in grade school curricula with stated goals of relaxation, improving the self-esteem of the students, improving creativity, and improving academic performance. A teacher's manual for Do So reads, a new guided fantasy activity is included with each goal. These relaxation and imagination exercises build on the student's natural attraction to make-believe experience and increase their awareness of their own creative abilities. In Do So, there's Do So 1 and Do So 2 for kindergarten through third grade. Do So the Dolphin leads children to discuss their personal feelings and problems, and Do So the Dolphin does this by leading students on imaginary journeys to all sorts of places, primarily to a place called Aquatron, that is an imaginary world under the sea. And as they go through this land of Aquatron and engage all sorts of characters, then they are also escorted by various types of New Age music. PUMSY, a sister program in pursuit of excellence designed for first through fifth graders, PUMSY the Dragon does the same thing. PUMSY is introduced in a storybook. He leads students on fantasy trips to all sorts of places, teaches them all sorts of values, including the value of chanting. One of the end goals of the course is that children will come to realize, quote, that I am me and I am enough. In the Coping for Kids program, it contains the following guided imagery on cassette. Picture yourself lying on a cloud. Take a slow, nice ride to the ground and try to feel calmer than you were at the treetops. You may feel heavy in your arms and legs. That's good. You may also begin to feel warm. That's good too. Keep breathing slowly. Feel the energy around you. You have a lot of healing energy. You can use it to make things feel better that may be bothering you. If you have an ache or a problem in your body, imagine warm, healing energy moving there and making you feel better. In the process of meditation and transcendental meditation, New Agers also claim to be able to communicate with various spirit guides. For example, Joyce DeWitt and Linda Evans both claim to receive advice from time to time from a spirit guide named Mafu. Likewise, many grade school curricula introduce within these guided fantasy various types of wise guides. For example, Huntsville, Alabama parents discovered that relaxation techniques were being used in their school system. The tape leads children through deep breathing exercises and guided fantasy in order to make them feel strong and sure of themselves. Then the child is introduced to a very wise rabbit who has all the answers to the child's questions. In a guided fantasy, the child is taken to a secret place where he sits in a white beam of light, and there the child gets more answers to his questions from deep underground springs within the child. Similarly, the Do So the Dolphin fantasies. Do So, in taking the kids through Aquatron, they meet several different types of characters who give answers to their various questions of life. The teacher's guide for the SOS curriculum, Strengthening of Skills, reads, let your students know that if they find themselves unable to visualize a certain place or action, they can unblock themselves by visualizing a magic ring or a wand or a magic energy pill or a powerful companion. But what is wrong with meditation, guided imagery, and wise guides? First, there's no evidence that meditative techniques such as these or guided imagery accomplish the end goals that these teachers claim that they hope to accomplish. There's no evidence that the children's self-esteem improves or that academic performance improves. Robert Marzano, who is the co-author of Tactics for Thinking, another widely used curriculum that employs an awful lot of these types of techniques, his own research, again, shows that the guided imagery techniques allow for no improvement in academic performance. A second thing that's wrong with meditation guided imagery is it teaches children to solve their problems in life by escaping reality. By teaching these techniques, it is hoped that these children will continue to use these techniques even when they're not in class. This is supposed to be something that is to help them in life, not just help them in a specific exercise in class. Michael LaBrosse, the co-developer of Whole Mind Learning, states that the goal for his curriculum is for students to eventually not be reliant on the teacher to direct the imaging exercises. Instead, the students will eventually become self-guided. Instead of teaching children to learn to deal with reality through effective decision-making, critical thinking, guided imagery teaches children to escape reality to various types of places and to turn their back on reality. Third, the introduction of wise guides teaches children to look away from parents and God's Word and other types of authority for answers to their problems and to depend upon spiritual guidance in another form. And fourth, meditation and guided imagery techniques desensitize children to the religious practices of Eastern cult religions and New Age. By teaching children that there is real benefit to deep meditation and guided imagery and seeking spirit guides, schools are actually teaching children that there's really nothing wrong with these practices in matters of religion as well. Interestingly, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, these same techniques are being used in a lot of corporations, particularly big corporations, to improve performance of their employees. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission deemed that meditation and guided imagery techniques could not be mandated on employees who did not wish to participate. Yet, school systems are allowed to employ such methods on young children without parental consent, young children beginning in kindergarten who scarcely have the means to object to the techniques. Well, let me mention very briefly some other New Age practices and then make some concluding statements. Other forms of New Age practices include magic and sorcery. Some programs, not many, but there are some that contain a number of stories and pictures involving magic, witchery, sorcery, blood, and gore. Some that are just incredible. I was amazed at some, particularly a curriculum called Impressions, which I'm not real sure how widespread it was used. I know in 1991 in California, it was used in 8% of the public schools out there. But the contents of that curriculum was extremely shocking in terms of the blood and gore and witchery that was involved in the curriculum. By the way, that curriculum is no longer being printed, although the stock is still being sold to school systems. Second, self-focus. Many curricula have a self-focus. You can do all things. You are the most important things in life. The Quest curriculum does this from time to time. Third, the devaluation of parental authority. Let me just give you three quotes real quickly from the Quest curriculum again. There are important things, speaking to the students, this is in the student textbook called Changes. There are important things that you'll have to do in order to pass through the adolescent period successfully. Become independent from your parents and other adults and develop a clear sense of your own idea of right and wrong. Another quote. The generation gap gets widest when young people are going through adolescence. It's normal for adolescents to want to make their own decisions and to be as independent as possible. That's why parents can suddenly seem like nosy prison wardens. A third quote, this is under a section called 12 Rules for Getting Along with Your Parents. One of them includes, let others have their way sometimes, especially with little things. Ask for your parents' advice now and then on something big enough to make them feel important. In conclusion, one quote that I took from a book that Walter Martin wrote, he quoted Abraham Lincoln as saying, "The philosophy of education in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next." And that's largely true. That's interesting. What our children learn in school is what society will become like in future generations. And that's what makes all these things so much the more concerning. If you're like me, one of the things I wondered is, why? Why are schools involved in these types of programs? Why are they being taught across the United States the way that they are? Aren't schools responsible for academic teaching? Well, somewhere along the way, in answering that question, somewhere along the way, the National Education Association and similar organizations decided that parents were not doing an acceptable job of teaching their children what to think and what to believe. And in many cases, of course, they're right. They point out that with in a society where both parents work and parents come home tired and children spend the evening sitting in front of the television, children simply are not receiving the instruction that they need to give them a proper sense of values and learning how to get along in society. Further, they argue, because kids spend about 8 hours every day in school, the public school system is the place that is best equipped to teach children these things instead of the parents. Let me give you a quote from the National Education Association in their book, Values, Concepts, and Techniques. Social psychologists underscore the importance of developing a firm set of values since they see our values as the prime determinant of behavior. To be fully in charge, each individual student needs to know the determinants of behavior, and since the external world offers few consistent role models, that means us as parents, since the external world offers few consistent role models, each needs to look at other sources, namely internal sources. The role of the teacher becomes one of helping students discover and clarify their own values rather than one of teaching a prescribed set of values. And that's exactly what the public school system is about in many cases. They do so through various types of curriculum. Some do it through packaged programs such as Quest and DoSo and many others. Others do it without a packaged curriculum, which is even more scary many times, making it very, very difficult for parents to have any idea what their children are being taught. What the NEA and other education organizations are setting out to do is not all bad. Nor is it, in many cases, designed to turn children into New Agers. And that's not what I am setting out to prove this evening. They are doing what they think is right and what they think is best for children in a society where the moral fabric is unraveling around them. Unfortunately, for we as Christians, we live in a nation that is bent upon eliminating all Christ-centered values from the public school system. Unfortunately, few teachers anymore hold to Christ-centered values. They would have a very difficult time teaching them if they were inclined to, but even so, few are even inclined in that direction. And further unfortunate is the fact that curriculum writers seem bent on experimenting with our children with various types of newfangled psychological techniques to make our children more rounded individuals. The end result for Christians is that their children, who spend about 8 hours a day in school, have the potential of being damaged greatly. I have 5 minutes, and I've been asked also to give some advice on what our responsibility is as parents. And I'm going to run through these quickly. And I'm not in a position to give advice in terms of experience or maturity. So I throw these out as general things. And those of you who are older and have more experience, please, during the question and answer session, feel free to give your advice. First, As Christian parents, we must teach our children. The best defense against false teaching is proper teaching. We must make the time to develop within our children a proper and very real relationship with Jesus Christ and a proper respect for God's will. The worst thing that we can do as Christians is to send our children to school without a good, stable sense of who they are and what they're about. Without a stable sense of true value, they will learn values one way or another. And if we don't teach them Christ-centered values, they will likely pick up on the neutral values, so-called, that are being taught in our public school system. Second, talk to your children. Find out what is happening in the school system where you're at. Pay attention to the books and schoolwork that they bring home. However, remember this, that most of these curricula are not in a form that students bring home from school. They are being taught by teachers who have manuals and other resource books, and they're taught orally in class by the teachers. And so you may not know, based on what your children bring home, what's being taught. Do look at their books, but also realize that that may not mean that such techniques are not being used. To avoid parental outrage, many of these curriculum have been kept very quiet. As a matter of fact, the Do So curriculum, the counselors who teach it are also told to instruct their kids that they need not inform their parents that they are being taught that curriculum. Third, talk to school teachers and board members. Try to find out what types of curricula are being used, beginning in kindergarten, because that's where most of these begin. And that seems to be the heavy focus, is elementary school. Most damaging curricula are taught under the guise of such things as health education, drug education, behavioral sciences, social sciences, home economics, cultural development, literature, writing enhancement, guidance counseling, sex education, and also gifted children programs. And if you have children that are in gifted children programs, often called TAG programs, talented and gifted, especially be concerned about what they're teaching. This is an area where they focus a lot of these special types of extracurricular activities. Fourth, subscribe to some useful materials. If you have children in school, subscribe to some materials that will keep you informed about what's happening generally in the education world. There are various types of organizations that provide publications. The Eagle Forum, which is especially set up to survey various types of curricula in our nation. It's headed up by Phyllis Schlafly, I believe. She has a couple of publications. One is called The Education Reporter. Focus on the Family puts out a publication called Citizen that's often very good and keeps pretty good track of these things. Other helpful organizations that publish things is Citizens for Excellence in Education. They're located in California. Christian Educators, also in California. And Education Research Analysis, located in Longview, Texas. Fifth, if you find problems, do take the time to talk to your school board, talk to the teachers, but realize that in most states, also that even if you can't get the curriculum changed, you can ask for your students to be dismissed when those activities are happening in class. That's not the case in all states, but it is in most states. But also, the NEA is fighting that very hard right now. They're trying to make it mandatory that children attend all activities within the school. Fifth, of course, there are also other types of education available, including private education, and many people are also turning to home education. And my time is up.